Hello, my friends. Hey, hello. Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast. Hey, I am about to get on a boat with a lot of other nerd people. It's going to be ridiculously fun. And I also, Monica and Katie of Nerdist are definitely like, come on, Sandra, send us the intro. Then you can be gone. So, okay, here it is. Hi. This week's episode is a love letter to all of the listeners who have Facebooked me, emailed me, Twittered at me, that they want to be sex educators now. Because it's difficult to become a sex educator that has accurate information and is well trained and has access to some basic ethics and just influence. Like, go to a conference, like, further yourself as a sex educator. Go to school for it, for sure. But not everyone has access to that. So I sat down with a few folks from San Francisco Sex Information this week and talked about the training that I went through, which was really difficult and wonderful and affordable, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. And it's really improved who I am as a sex educator, even though I went through it only less than a year ago. So if you don't want to listen to a bunch of sex nerds talk about how they talk to people about sex, go listen to some butt stuff somewhere else, because I have lots of episodes on that. Also, we will be talking about butt stuff here, so hey, maybe stick around. I don't know. Things to know, I will be in Washington, D.C. Mid-March, so March 16th, a Sunday night, I will be teaching at Lotus Blooms in Alexandria. March 17th, I'll be at the Pinch Bar in D.C. talking about podcast stuff, probably laughing a lot. Do you want to be there? You should. Why not? You should. You really should. My partner is looking at me funny. Are you judging me? Judging face? This whole episode's about judging face, so it's just funny that I'm getting. Oh, hands down? Oh, more judging. Oh, silent laughter. Oh, tongues. Ooh, scrunchy face. Anyway, all right, I gotta go. He's like, don't narrate me. Okay, have a wonderful week. Enjoy this conversation. It was fun. FYI, all three folks are sitting on a couch and I am sitting on a coffee table just leaning at them like a really creepy reporter. So it was really fun just to like juggle all of their comments. So this was a great episode. I'm really glad to share it with you. Go team fun, etc., etc. See you on the flip side.
Let's get on a boat!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sandra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hey, sex nerd friends. I am here with some people who I have been meaning to talk to for a while. And I am nervous because these people in this room have been my teachers and are really good at being really intimidating. And they're making each other faces as if they're so innocent. Yeah, right. Okay. So you may remember that several months ago, I mentioned that I was going up to San Francisco every other weekend to take SFICI training, which is San Francisco Sex Information Training, to be a sex educator. Yeah, I was already a sex educator, but I always want more knowledge because I'm greedy. You know how it is. So I'm here with Joel Burton and Yvonne Piper, who are two sex educators and fantastic human beings in the San Francisco area. They'll tell me more in just a minute. And I've got David Teal, who is one of my classmates in the whole situation. So he can speak to some experiences as well. Basically, we're about to get into it with what it means to be a sex educator and why SFICI exists and why these people spend so many hours being really intimidating to people like me to make the world a better place. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Yvonne, how about we get to you first? Because you are the mistress of ceremonies of all things like butt prolapse, etc.
I do love prolapses. That is correct. I don't care what organ prolapse is as long as it's coming out. That can be rectal. That can be vaginal. Yeah. Prolapses. I'm really excited to be the prolapse lady. Sure.
So yes, what is your training? I know you recently graduated with a master's. So like, what's your basic background and the things that you do in the world to make the world better or worse?
Right now, I work as a nurse practitioner. I work in San Francisco at a clinic called Lion Martin. I am doing primary care, gynecological care, and transition medicine. So I'm helping people transition gender. And I'm definitely incorporating my SFSI training every day. Sex comes up a lot in my work. So I am definitely incorporating my sex educator skills into my healthcare provider skills. So that is currently what I am doing. In terms of other things I've done in the past, prior to this, I was a registered nurse. Prior to that, I was managing a free clinic in San Francisco. Prior to that, I was a librarian. And I promise all of these things totally have something to do with SFSI, and I can explain that as we go on.
Librarian, hot. She also wears glasses and has...
And I love cardigans, all of these things.
Yeah, Yvonne's cool. Like, she's got, like, her look is down. Like, she's got, like, hardcore, like, kind of, like, there's a little skull on her pretty pendant. And she's got, like, jet black, like, 1920s kind of bob. But she's kind of edgy about it, you know. And sometimes she wears, like, red lipstick, like, these glasses. So she's, like, smart and kind of scary. But, like, sexy. But then smart again. Oh, it's hard. But you know what I mean. Yes. Hey, Joel, how's it going?
Hi.
So you're like extra smart, and the guy who was my interviewee for getting into this program that we're about to talk about. And so that's extra intimidating because you were really good at the like blank face, like no, you didn't give anything away in the interview for this program. Nothing.
Well, we teach positive neutral face. It's SFSI. So we practice it during the interviews.
You got an A plus from me, you bastard.
You did too. You got into the class.
Well, that's true. Thanks. So can you share a little bit about yourself and what you do out in the world?
Yeah, I did my grad work in women's studies and did sex ed for a few years for the state of Maryland doing risk reduction work with teenagers, and then ended up at Planned Parenthood, where I mostly did research on the anti-choice movement and did some post-disclosure counseling and IT work. So I worked in sex ed for a few years formally, and now I have not for a while, but I do through SFSI. So... otherwise, I write and teach about software because I'm a dork like all other men in San Francisco.
Is that a thing? Is that like all the men in San Francisco are dorks?
Yes.
Huh. David, are you a dork?
More or less, yes. I would agree with that sentiment.
I should move to San Francisco, clearly.
David works on software even dorkier than the one I work on.
Wait, what software do you work on in a short, concise sentence?
I don't build anything. I break into stuff and then talk about it in dorky ways.
Like a hacker?
Yes.
That's my only reference as a person who doesn't understand software design.
That is the one-line summary.
So as a colleague of mine in the student department, why did you go into San Francisco sex information training?
So I was explicitly looking for volunteer opportunities, and I come from a rather backwards way of family of sex educators. My grandmother was a very early Planned Parenthood worker. My dad actually ended up being a sex educator, through a church that I went to when I was a kid. And I kind of fell into it too. And weirdly enough, I have never spoken with my family about sex in any way whatsoever. but we're all somehow involved with it in kind of a volunteer capacity.
That's pretty cool. I like that. My family likes to overshare with me about sex. it's not my thing, but you know, they feel really safe, and I guess that's what's important.
My mother feels way too safe asking me questions about anal sex, and I wish she felt less safe with me. You called me intimidating earlier, and for whatever reason my mother doesn't get that, and I really wish she did. I wish my mother felt more intimidated to ask me sex questions. I don't know what I'm doing wrong to be so welcoming, but I need to fix it.
I guess that would be a boundary conversation, but it's like, also, how can you... It's hard to shut someone down who has questions.
My mother has no boundaries. None. 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 None.
My family said about two sentences their life about sex with me. My entire sex ed was on the way to college was don't get any girls in trouble. And that was the start and end of our entire conversation about sex.
So my mother was a labor and delivery nurse. So I've heard about placentas and vaginas since I was 3 years old. So my mother has no boundaries whatsoever, especially when it comes to talking about genitalia. Like, absolutely no boundaries.
Nice. If I ever procreate, I'm curious, like, the kind of boundaries I'll have to create so that I don't freak out my kids all the time.
It depends if you would like to have that kind of relationship with your kids or not. Apparently, I don't know. I guess Joel's situation is a little bit different than mine. I don't know anyone who has a really good, healthy relationship with their parents around discussing sex. I have no idea what that would look like because mine is just so utterly fucked.
I've heard of some examples, and it's fascinating to be like, really? You had a healthy childhood? You had a... Wait, that sounds... What? That's how... What?
I don't believe any of them. Not a single one.
That's hilarious. So speaking of sex questions and whatnot, well, first of all... Well, okay. From what I remember of the history of just learning about what this since that's what's brought us all together to know that we exist in the world, is this organization that I understand started in the 70s and it was to answer people's questions and it was a phone line, but there's some transitioning in need of funding to become more available for answering emails and whatnot. But it's basically, where do you go to get accurate sex information, and Sphissy is there for you, etc. This is not a commercial. They don't pay me. I just, you know, they're fantastic.
They don't pay any of us.
Sphissy pays absolutely nobody to do a single thing. We are all volunteers, every single person in the organization.
That's right. That's right. And who wants to explain what Sphissy is? Who's the PR person? Who wants to be the PR person for the next 2 seconds? Everyone's pointing at Yvonne.
I guess I technically am the PR person. So San Francisco Sex Information is an organization that gives free, anonymous, confidential, accurate sex information. We also train people to be sex educators, either for our organization or out in their professional development elsewhere.
And it is located only in San Francisco, but is available. Their services are available for anyone, anywhere in the world.
Correct. So we have people emailing us from around the world. We also have people calling us from around the world. At some point, we may be able to do text message services. We are also doing a presence online in places like Yahoo Answers and Reddit, trying to answer questions from anyone who's posting something that we could answer for them.
Right. And why would someone need this service? Like, duh, can't you just Google it and stuff? And like, it's all out there. Like, the internet has everything now. Duh. Right?
They do Google it, and that's part of the benefit and part of the challenge. A lot of the times we talk with people who have been Googling all day and they're overwhelmed with contradictory information and they don't know where to start and they don't know how to interpret what they've learned. So they'll call us and be like, I've read this and I've read this and I've read this and I don't know what's true and I don't know what's important. So part of it, kind of our mission has shifted from you can't find information about sex to you can't find accurate information about sex, or you can't interpret information about sex.
So Sphissy trained humans on the other end of the text message or email or line are able to help you dig through that mess and arrive at accurate information that is helpful.
Absolutely. And one of the big things that we do in Sphissy training is try to teach people how to critique resources. So they are not just accepting anything that they Google, but they are able to look at what they've Googled and say, okay, I can break this down and say, this experiment wasn't actually very good. Oh, I'm looking at how many people were in the study, and I don't really think that that makes a very valid conclusion. Or they're able to say, this organization is very biased, and so I think that they might be influenced by something outside of their own information when they're reporting their results.
Yeah, identifying, like, just media literacy, or just being able to identify bias. The Young Turks, who this wonderful news source on YouTube, they have me on some of their shows sometimes. And for one of the one-on-ones on TOET University, one of the segments was men and women. Are men always attracted to women in their friendships? Like, this was just this thing. And the article that was presented was asking guys about if they're attracted to women who they're friends with. And the sample size of the group was 15 people. And everyone's nodding.
Yeah.
Always look at the end.
Also, I would like to see their power analysis. I would like to see how many people they intended to recruit based on what N they were looking for and what R they had. And just, yeah, there are many things that you could get really, really nerdy about. But just the bottom line is, when I hear an N of 15, when asking a broad question, like, are you attracted to your friends? I get what I like to call a dubious eyebrow.
Ah, the dubious eyebrow effect. Joel's stroking lovingly her eyebrow. Calm down, eyebrow. Calm down.
I'm just saying that it is one of the skills that we like to teach when you are looking at any kind of research or any kind of article. Just be a little skeptical when you see a really small number. And it's not necessarily that a big number means that something is true or accurate, but when you see a very small number for a very commonplace question, that's just not a great combination of things in terms of getting an accurate result.
We also see a lot where people are posting their personal experiences and anecdotes online, and people look for that when they look for sex ed, and that's great, but they don't often think about the process of women who are unhappy with this birth control method are the ones who go onto discussion boards and talk about it, not women who necessarily have average experiences or women who are happy with it. So helping them understand not just how to think about studies, but how to think about anecdata and personal experiences and kind of where to put that in things.
Definitely. Like, even just for running this podcast, like, people like on iTunes will be like, yay, I like your show. But then there's that person who just is like one star and is like, this shit's fucked up. Sandra doesn't know what she's talking about. I hate her. She's stupid. You know what I'm like? Man, you're mean. But I realize that they're just a really vocal like minority. And then people who are just, it's a small group of people, but they can be even more vocal than the people in the middle who are just doing fine and enjoying the show or like enjoying the sex and like having a healthy experience.
Anytime you want to trust things on the internet, stop for a second and go read like comments on YouTube and then reconsider that plan, you know.
Yeah, it's so skewing.
I mean, whenever you do look at forums like Joel was referring to, nobody goes onto internet forums to say, my IUD is great and I've never had any problems with it. And I'm going to post that every other week so that you keep that information fresh in your head. You know, people go on those places to complain about how things aren't working for them. And so people get a kind of a skewed idea of, you know, how about the side effects that birth control causes and things like that. So it's a kind of another thing that part of what we try and give some perspective on.
Hey, David, are you going into the education stuff too at SVSE?
So right now I've been volunteering on the switchboard for several months, and I've been assisting with the current round of training that we're doing right now.
Oh, cool. Because it bummed me out that I don't live in San Francisco. So I was like, I can't come and join and help and hold up numbers and things. So, okay. So SVSE training, I experienced, there's this, you have to go in for an in-person interview, which is you're in a room filled with people, and all the educator people are so just, yeah, the blank face. I don't care. You can call it neutral, whatever, but it is.
Positive neutral.
No. It's not even positive neutral. It's just, it's so neutral. It's.
No, I understand that I have what is known as resting bitch face, and I'm actually very proud of it. I have cultivated this skill, and I wear it well. And I was doing an interview this last time with another trainer who has a very positive face. And so the two of us were absolute good cop, bad cop. And I got, yes, I know, Joel, I know. Someone else is a better good cop than you are. And there was one trainee in particular who would look around the circle, jump over my head, and then look at the other trainer. Because I understand what my face looks like.
Yeah, no, it's cool. It's like, I get it. You know, you're trying to be neutral and try not to be judgmental, but then it's just, but it's almost like how, you know, when you text someone and they don't respond and the being ignored or not being, it almost felt like it's sort of like the study with the babies and the moms and then like studying how the babies would start to cry when moms would not smile back at the baby when they smile. It was like that. It was so upsetting.
Well, yeah, that's what I was going to say. What I think that we should do for SVSE training is anyone who feels rejected, we're going to have a little wire trainer in the middle covered in felt. And if they feel sad, they pick it up and cuddle it. And that's how they say, I'm feeling insecure because you're being neutral to me. And I think that's going to give us really good information about our potential trainees. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're implementing that. So anyone who's applying for SVSE in the future, you will have a felt trainer that you can cuddle.
Speaking of feeling rejected during, because I was feeling not rejected, but just sort of like so disconnected in, especially like the first weekend, because it's 4 weekends. So it's a total of 8 days. And it's like, what is it, like 8 hours a day? And it's just like fisting. Next 15 minutes, we're talking about fisting. Yeah. Punch you in the face with fisting. Okay. 2 minute break. Now we're going to talk about, you know, prolapses. Okay, 2 minute break. Now we're going to talk about good communication in 20 minutes. We're going to blow your mind. And it's, you are so, not you, but like the organization, it's so well organized and you get, and it's an affordable, intelligent, fact-based education, just series for 8 days, just constantly. So you're just fried, but it's so great. I have the best notes from these raps.
I mean, to be fair, our breaks are 10 minutes. And prolapses do not get their own talk. They just happen to show up a couple of times. And I do have to say, we can't take credit ourselves for how it is organized. We really inherited the structure of training. We had previous trainers who had assembled it in the way that it is organized right now in terms of how you chunk up the day, like how long you go in between breaks. We did do a reorganization around 2007. When I took SPCI training 2003, we didn't really have a good structure for every weekend. So right now we have weekends that we give themes to. So the first weekend is an overview of sex education, and the second is medical information, and then there is psychosocial, and then there's a grab bag of all the rest. And when I went through training, every weekend was grab bag. We had no kind of organization. It was, now we're going to talk about anatomy. Oh, let's switch gears and talk about communication. Whoops, now we're going to go talk about BDSM. And we reorganized it a few years ago to make it into little parcels that had themes so people could pick a weekend if they just wanted to do one weekend and no others. And so that's something that has been a change from when I took training a few years ago. But in general, the training organization has been pretty static the whole time that I've been involved with it. So we are just perpetuating something that our predecessors did really, really well in terms of organizing the time for training.
There is a lot covered, though, and it's people often, we check in with the students at the end of each day, as you know, and at the end of the first day, and we've covered like, this is oral sex, this is PV sex, this is anal sex, this is fisting. We've gone through like every possible kind of fucking that they expect us to talk about. And then they're like, what's going to happen the next 7 days? And there's just a lot more to cover. So there is a lot of information that kind of gets thrown out pretty quickly. And then we kind of loop back and talk about, like Yvonne said, more about anatomy, more about psychosocial stuff, more about what comes up around aging or kids or teens or adults or things like that.
Yeah, it's like, like when I tell someone, like one of the classes I teach is a fellatio class, and they go, what could you possibly talk about? Like, you know, like more than 15 minutes. And it's like, you go through a 2-hour class, you're like, wow, this could be a whole weekend, you know? And then I show up for like the first weekend. I'm like, how can you, there's nothing left. And then I look at the list of things left to cover. I'm like, oh my God. Cause it's talking about kids. It's talking to adults. It's the communication. It's sex and aging. It's BDSM. Like
medical emergencies. One of our favorites.
I could do an entire day that is just medical emergencies and go through all of the gory images and talk about all the ways you fix it.
You could do an entire day on what not to put in your ass.
Yes, absolutely. That is absolutely an entire 8-hour day. We could go through every object that has ever been put up an ass and say, no, not this one. And we can actually come up with the studies from PubMed that tell you why not to do it. It's really fun. Anyone who wants something to do for an afternoon, just go into PubMed, type in rectal foreign bodies, and enjoy the 80 or so articles that come up and read them all because they're so good. And if you get images with them, even better. Look at that peanut butter jar turned upside down up someone's ass. Look at that. Just look at that. He did not slip in the shower washing his dog. That is a lie.
Urethral foreign bodies are also highly entertaining.
Oh. Basically, any body part plus foreign bodies equals entertainment.
Or is a shortcut just concrete enema will also get you to some of the better parts.
Oh man, yeah, it's fascinating. Humans are curious, curious monkeys.
Curious, yes, smart, not always. Sometimes unable to foresee consequences. And that's why SPCI is here, to help you think of the consequences.
How can people access SPCI? What's their website, et cetera?
Sure, we're at SPCI, sfsi.org, or you can call us from anywhere in the world. We're at 415-989-SPCI.
It's so crazy because like, it feels like no one calls anymore. Just like, call us now at 1-800-422-blah-blah-blah-blah. Like, it's like, oh my God, you can like actually call you guys? Like, that's crazy.
They totally do. And then very often, like the first minute, they'll ask us, like, we can ask you anything you want about sex? Yes. Really? Yes. Like, I think people sort of expect there's going to be some sort of like mediated exchange of how this has to work. But yeah, people do call us all the time.
Oh, that's wild. Okay. So actually, it's funny is after training, something came up and I was like, oh my God, where am I going to get this information? I don't know. And I wanted to call SPCI and then I was afraid that somebody that I had trained with would be on the other end and that they'd see my ID and see who I was. I'm like, I don't need that.
We don't see their phone numbers. No. That's confidential.
Oh really? So you have no caller ID. So you don't know who the person is.
We can tell if someone has called before, but we don't ever see any personal information like phone numbers.
That is really good to know.
Yes, that is correct. I'm not on the switchboard anymore, so I'm not the best person to corroborate this. But yeah, it is. We do still maintain confidentiality.
You can just trust me.
What? No. Yes, actually, because otherwise you're an anecdote. Burn.
I use the word anecdote so much more now. Just call myself out. I'm like, oh, okay, like this is a personal share. That's an anecdote. This isn't data to extrapolate.
That makes me think that we did our job. Yeah. Now that you can recognize anecdote and call it out, that really makes me think that we did a great job training you. I feel really proud of all of us. Everyone sitting here, I'm very proud of all of us. Good job, team.
Good job, team. So I have a question. Since Vissi has brought us together and it's to answer questions, what kind of questions? I mean, is it just runs the gamut? Like, what kind of questions do you get? Is it always the same thing? Are there certain patterns? And is there a point where you're like, this one again, seriously, has the world not figured out rimming yet or whatever it is?
The different Vissi shifts have different nicknames that sometimes reflect popular questions. And my particular shift, Thursday afternoons, is called First Time Anal. We also get lots of, I just got diagnosed with this. What does this mean? And a lot of times that isn't even so much about like, what does this medically mean? But more, does this mean my partner was cheating on me? Or does this mean I can't have sex again? Or does this mean I have to tell everyone? Or kind of more the sort of softer end of STDs is a big, big piece for what we answer.
Yeah, because the practitioners don't necessarily tell you how to live your life after you get diagnosed. They're like, all right, have fun with herpes. And you're like, wait, what now?
I have to say, as a medical provider, that's actually one of my big areas of focus when someone is diagnosed with something, is trying to negotiate, okay, who do you tell? How do you tell them? How do you live with this? And I don't think I would have that perspective had I not gone through Vissi first. I really think that Vissi trained me well for being able to handle that end of things, as opposed to just delivering a diagnosis and some kind of medication and walking out of the room. So I actually really like Vissi as a training ground for medical providers. Even if they don't get new medical information, they do get new communication skills for how to handle diagnoses and partner disclosure and negotiation of future sexual encounters. And I think it's a really valuable thing to be able to coach your patients about.
Now, okay, I know this feels like a Vissi it feels like I'm doing PR for Vissi, and it's not that. It's that this is such a unique training program, because there's limited availability of training programs in the world around sexuality, and especially for sex educators. And I just like the accessibility of it. I mean, also, I live in LA, so it was an easy flight up, and luckily I was able to have that ability to fly up and be a part of the training program. I also drove, which was dumb. But who takes these? Because I didn't know. I thought it would be all people like me who was doing like sex ed stuff. And I was kind of shocked at the variety of people. So who have you seen? Like, what types of folks come to trainings?
It's often about maybe one third therapists who they get a lot of training about relationship stuff during their therapy training, but not necessarily a lot about like the nuts and bolts of sex. And it's often about one third sex workers who have a lot of nuts and bolts, but not necessarily stuff perhaps about communication or more information about anatomy. And then like a third sex nerds, miscellaneous people who want to work in sex ed.
We get a lot of folks who come through who want to volunteer for the organization. So it's not 100% of people who end up volunteering, but that is one of the options, is you don't need to be doing sex ed in the outside world. We have the option for folks who just want to be filtered into our organization and be on the switchboard. This is the training ground for them as well. We might want to talk to this guy over here who did that.
David, tell us everything.
Okay. I mean, I've been on the switchboard for several months. I would say that Joel's characterization of the most frequent questions is fairly accurate in terms of most of the time people want to know how to insert various things into their butt. There's far and away the most common question. A lot of things about fertility, which has been actually an interesting thing for me, because it's one of those things that I've just said, yes, don't be fertile. And that's kind of been my standard approach. But when I went through the training, it was specifically so that I could kind of get involved in an educational context, because my day job doesn't really give me the opportunity to really deal with that kind of thing. And it's been an excellent experience. It's sometimes nerve-wracking and sometimes very heartening, and sometimes you look at the misinformation out there and you say, oh, it's horrible that there's this much information, but you leave everything better than you found it. And so I found it to be a pretty productive and useful thing for myself personally.
Like a Boy Scout, leave it better than, is that a Boy Scout thing or Girl Scout thing? I think it's a Girl Scout thing.
I think all scouts. I think you're supposed to do that if you scout, if you're any gender of scout.
Whichever one talks more about knot tying skills, that's probably more like Vissi.
Yes, that one. The naughty one is the Vissi-like organization. I don't remember. Sorry.
Were you both a Boy Scout and a Girl Scout?
So I was a Girl Scout, but my brother, who was a Boy Scout, I had to go to all of his meetings because of childcare arrangements. So I feel like I was an honorary Boy Scout. I had to go to all of that shit. And they did nothing around knot tying. I remember they got to drink. They drank bug juice at the end of every meeting. I don't know. It was Kool-Aid. They called it bug juice. It was apparently some boy thing.
Due to some weird overlap in grade versus age and progression of the Boy Scouts, I was a Weeblo for 2 years, not one, which when I later came out as queer, I thought was really funny and appropriate.
Okay. Oh, no. Weeblo was funny the entire time. Yeah. That was always funny. Yeah. When my brother got to be a Weeblo, that was the funniest thing that had happened to 10-year-old me. Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's just the word Weeblo. Like, that just sounds so, oh, Weeblo.
There is just nothing homoerotic about that at all. Nothing.
Oh, I didn't get it till he said it, and then I felt dirty. I love it. Oh my God, so many things. So, okay, for people who live in Sweden or wherever they are there any resources? Because obviously not everyone, okay. A lot of people who write to me will say that they just enjoy this podcast because it's fun and it keeps them occupied at work or on the treadmill, wherever they are. But then some folks start to feel inspired, like, I want to do some activism. I want to educate and be better about this. And I get really enthusiastic. Are there any resources to the person who lives really far away and can't necessarily do SFISI training, but to like level up in terms of their skills around sexuality and ed?
Well, I feel really sad having to say this because this opportunity just finished. But there is an organization called Coursera, which is an online group, coursera.org, that offers university classes through a lot of different universities, some in the US, some abroad. And I just finished TAing for a course on contraception. That was a 5-week course that was a modification of what was offered to University of California, San Francisco nursing graduate students about contraception. It's going to get rerun at some point in the future, but this is also a great organization. Coursera is a great place to find other types of free classes that you could get anywhere in the world. I know in that class, we had a lot of folks who were outside of the US, like 50% of our students were not speaking English as their first language, 50% were outside of North America. So that's one example of a training that's out there that I will totally vouch for in terms of accuracy and based in evidence and applicable to the outside world, but also really accessible for anyone, even if they don't have a sex educator background. So Coursera is one of the places out there that you could definitely get some extra education, depending on what's being offered. But it's a place that I would recommend people look just to see what else is out there in terms of free courses.
SFISI also has an account on Goodreads with books that we've been reading about sex and resources that we like. So you can connect with us on Goodreads and find out some things that we think are really awesome resources now.
Wait. I mean, when I Google stuff sometimes, Goodreads will come out up, but I like it for quotes and stuff. But wait, what is Goodreads? I feel embarrassed now, and you're looking at your judging face. Get back to neutral face.
What kind of nerd are you exactly?
The kind with a bookshelf?
So Goodreads is a site for readers, and it's a place where people often are like, these are the novels I'm reading or such, and you can chat with friends or even share reviews and such. But we have an account where staff members and volunteers contribute, you know, what are the sex education books or sex nerd books we've been reading? And it's a good way to find out what other people at SFISI think are credible, useful books.
So it's like Facebook meets Pinterest for books.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that wasn't so hard, Joel. Stop giving me such a hard time.
I've gone back to positive neutral face.
Thank you.
Well, Sandra, you were saying that you have a bookshelf, and this is basically SFISI's bookshelf, but made accessible to the world. So imagine going into the switchboard and seeing what we have available or what people have read would recommend. So this is, think of it as SFISI's bookshelf.
Ah, that's juicy.
A very damp bookshelf.
Moist. No, even worse. No, nothing damp or moist. No.
Oh my God. Joel just whispered in Yvonne's ear and something really sweet.
He whispered into my hair. I didn't hear it, but my hair totally got it.
He whispered. I think he said something positive because they're friends and stuff.
Positive neutral.
Yeah, positive neutral. Yeah, it wasn't that positive. I still feel a little intimidated.
Wait, positive neutral, is that a role-playing alignment? Or, you know, it's like chaotic neutral. Positive, I can't remember the...
We like to think of SFISI as the paladins of sex. We're lawful good.
Oh, you are lawful good.
That's a level of nerd to which I do not subscribe.
It's just a subset of nerd, okay?
I don't understand it. I'm going to go over here with PubMed. That's the kind of nerd that I am. Sorry.
We accept all creed and color of nerd.
All nerd. We are a nerd rainbow. It's Fissy.
Any other resources around budding people who just want a little sex ed flavor, you know, in how they communicate with their friends? Because, you know, people who are the resource for their friends, I want them to be like empowered with the fist of knowledge.
I love giving a fist of knowledge.
Make it into a duck shape first.
Exactly. Yeah. Taper it first with lots of lube and lots of time. Another thing that I would recommend budding sex educators might want to look at is Yahoo Answers. Go on Yahoo Answers and look at sex questions and see what questions are being posed, see how people are answering them. And if you look at an answer and think, that smells like bullshit, think about your own process. How would you answer that? Do you need to look this up? If you're looking this up, offer that resource that you looked at in order to answer it to this person so they can do their own research. I think that's a pretty good training ground for newbie sex educators. And even if you're not the one answering, just looking at other people's answers with a critical eye and saying, oh, they're obviously giving an opinion, or they're obviously giving personal information or experience, and being able to recognize how that maybe isn't the most useful sex education for that individual who's asking.
And in some cases, honestly, they're just giving kind of cruel bullshit. Terrified 14-year-olds that are afraid they're pregnant will post, and people's answers will be like, yes, you are immediately pregnant because some guy came on your toenail. And part of why we're there is, you know, to give proper answers, but also to kind of counterbalance this kind of, you know, we're just here for the lulz kind of response, which there are a lot of people that are posting real questions they're really nervous about. And that's it's a good place, I think, for people who are interested in sex ed to connect to what is it like to not have information and to really, really be scared and need the information.
Well, that's a really good idea. Definitely. And also, I mean, just for me, I've now been telling people, like, through my evil office bounce back, like, go ahead and email Sfissy. Because beside personal emails to me, specifically to me, I can't be the resource when, like, you have that many people.
There are actually a couple of organizations out there in the world we've partnered with that we serve as the back end for their informational questions. So there was a video blog for a while that was using us as the back end. There is an informational website about birth control that uses us as their back end. So we are more than happy for other sex educators or organizations to refer people to us and say, hey, we heard about you from this source. Here's my sex ed question. Because we appreciate that there are some sex educators who don't have the bandwidth to be able to answer every single informational question that comes their way. So, yeah, please, please bounce people to Sfissy. We would love to get some of your listeners asking us their questions.
And thank you for being there. Go team, etc. Any particular memorable questions or, like, specifically horrifying, specifically hilarious, had to bite your tongue, you know, make you mad, triggering, those sorts of things? Anything that you're really like, damn.
Well, I did just have a man that was interested in learning how to incorporate anal play while masturbating, which really involved sort of him kind of listing everything in his medicine cabinet to ask whether or not he could put it into his butt. And, you know, part of it was like helping him feel comfortable with that idea, I suspect. And part of it was also educating around, like, hey, is it going to go up there and not come out? Is this something that you're going to have control over what happens? Those are the kind of questions that, you know, we like to answer that combines like helping them feel permission and giving them information.
Which is better anal play, my Aleve bottle or my ibuprofen bottle like that?
It depends on how big it is and how comfortable you are.
is this the Costco bottle or the little CVS right. bottle?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And neither one has a flared base, so you need to hang on tight.
How about you, Yvonne?
There was a question I got on the switchboard that came from a mother whose teenage daughter was diagnosed with genital herpes. And number one, mother was in denial about her daughter having any kind of sex. And it's funny because daughter was in the background also giving information. So mother would talk to me and then I'd ask a question. Mother would turn to daughter and say, hey, honey, did you do this? And daughter was giving responses. And from what I could hear, it sounded pretty legit. And it was a really complex situation where I didn't want to tell the mother, maybe you're not asking the right questions or maybe you're not getting the information that you want out of the daughter. So trying to do some education for the daughter, but also some education for the mother. And this was another one of these things where it was like, there was some medical information. Sure, there was some information about transmission, but really the important thing was for both of them to learn how to cope with the diagnosis. So there was a lot more counseling than there was anything else. So just trying to talk the two of them through, yeah, this is the diagnosis. Here's how you cope with it. Here's how it affects your relationship with each other. Here's how it affects daughter's relationship with future partners.
I'm surprised that a mom would, I mean, like the daughter was being that forthright with her mom. Like, I imagine that you get diagnosed with an STD, your parents are not involved at all.
Well, that was also my assumption. And I was very surprised that this was a mother calling on behalf of the daughter. And like I said, the daughter was in the background. She was giving answers. So yeah, they had that kind of relationship. And also that was a really unique perspective to get. And it's nice being a SFSI volunteer and getting to see that that relationship exists in the world. So that kind of blew my mind as well.
How about you, David?
So I think some of the most interesting recent ones have been what to do when somebody inserts an egg up their butt and they didn't take the shell off first. It turns out...
Hard-boiled, please.
Yeah, it turns out that, you know, when shells crack inside of your... Yes, there's some problems there. We try and walk them through how they should be at the hospital pretty soon. Other than that, I think one of the things that was maybe less amusing but kind of more illustrated why we're doing the stuff that we're doing was a question from somebody that was talking about how they were on their second of three vaccines for the HIV. And I was, oh my, this person is going to need some help. And so it's things like that that kind of... make us continue to try and disperse accurate information.
You mean because there is no HIV vaccine, so the fact that they think that they're two out of three on the HIV, that's like, there's so many things, red flags as to inaccuracy there?
Well, they were getting vaccinated for HPV, thinking that they were getting vaccinated for HIV, and it had not even occurred to me that that was something that people thought. We get... interesting interpretations of all kinds of things, mostly things in butts, I think.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Well, thank you so much for spending time with me and processing this magical experience. It's also healing for me to be around you guys and to not feel like you hate me. It's cool.
No, we never hated you. That's just what our faces look like.
It's very studied. You were a great student.
Yes.
It's neutral phase. David, did you find neutral phase a little intimidating?
I think I was pretty decent at the neutral face myself. I think Yvonne actually has a talent for actually doing smiling bitch face.
That's the worst one.
Yeah. So that one I think is a little bit more worrisome.
Thank you for saying I have the worst face.
You're good for looking cheery while you're telling people that they need to find a citation for that.
Yes, I actually can do that. Okay.
And you just look really sharp. Like, you just look very intelligent. The minute someone says something off, you're just like, stupid, you know, like, don't be stupid. You're like, I won't be stupid, I'm sorry.
I try to poker face it better than that, I thought, but maybe I don't.
There's some truth, I see.
Yvonne and I are the people who, during class, students give presentations, and she and I are the ones who ask students questions about their presentations, as you know. So we have a practice kind of good cop, bad cop pattern, and she always draws the straw for bad cop.
Which is hilarious, because actually, in real life, Joel is a worse cop than I am.
I think you were trying to bad cop me during my presentation, Joel.
No, I think I was.
No, that was when he was asking me what kind of erection he was having at the moment.
I don't remember that.
Thank you so much for being part of it. Does anyone want to share their Twitter handles or emails or want to make yourselves available? Or would you rather be more like only mildly Googleable?
So let's just do the askus@sfsi.org email if you need any kind of sex questions answered.
Okay, cool.
Thank you so much, and go team fun.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Now leaving nerdist.com.